Welcome to ITE1, Module 16, Part 1. Today we're talking about security. But before that, we will have a quiz, because I don't think we had one last week. Anyone confirm that with me? Because seriously, I don't think we did. I was just...
No, we didn't.
I was ready to be out of lecture at 10:30, and I think everybody else was too. So, okay. Any questions, comments, concerns about labs and that kind of good stuff?
I have a question about last week's, what was last week's lecture?
What's up?
What was last week's lecture?
Last week's lecture was the last
Last week's lecture was
advanced
networking.
15 part
okay.
2.
You already passed that final, so.
Up on the
yes.
list, by the way.
Yep, they're up, all the time.
They certainly are.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I just literally could not remember what we talked about last
That's
week.
That's okay. I literally
not
could
I
not remember if we had a patch last
that.
Week.
Yeah, if holding us, we hold ourselves to a high standard here at Cisco.
If you're not sure whether a lecture is up, go and have a look, because it probably will be. It's just we haven't announced these two. I'm looking at going for a podcast next term, because I think if we could podcast them, people would like that.
Yeah,
and then
no,
you can have your podcatcher of choice just grab them
yeah.
down.
All right, so let's have a quiz. I've got
question zero. Ooh. We should get Grace a beer, B an apple cider, C a large glass of spirits, or D none of the above, or E A, B, and C.
We have a winner!
And we have a quiz, too.
We've already got coffee, Luke. Makona.
Oh, yeah, and I've got an Autobox, because as I reach down to read with my left hand, I realize that I can't hold the button down at the same time.
There's always your nose.
I think that only works for the iPhone.
Press the button with your foot.
I assume we can't use nose dial for the iPhone.
I use a large caliber shell casing for that.
Well, you're
you know, I don't think I'm that flexible, that. So, unfortunately... Shut up. Which protocol is fast and useful on small networks with low security requirements? Choose one. Is it A, AppleTalk, B, HTTP, C, IPX, SPX, D, NetBUI? Choose now. And the winning answer is definitely D.
IPX SPX is not low complexity.
Is AppleTalk a real thing? Like, what is?
Yeah.
Yes, it is real.
Last
week, it's really old.
And like DECnet, it's still in the Linux kernel.
Gotcha.
I didn't even know it was still alive.
There are some implementations of it running around the place, but yeah.
Oh dear. Which two protocols are used to?
AppleTalk capable.
Which two protocols are used to receive email? Choose two. Is it DHCP, yes or no? Okay, yep, that's right. It's a no. SNMP.
What
you were
is
right,
that
will be
is
a
that just
no.
Made up?
I have
Simple Network Management Protocol. You can use it for tracking traffic usage on links and stuff.
All right, IMAP. Absolutely, yes. And the bonus question, what port are we on for IMAP? Anyone?
The plain text version.
143?
Absolutely
well
right!
Yeah. 993 is the secure one.
It is, although technically you should be able to do a start TLS on 143 and actually turn on the encryption, whereas the 993 is a horrible brokenness that was implemented for clients such as Outlook Express that couldn't handle the fact that there was a secure version running on the commonly used port. End rant.
Yeah.
Fair enough. SSH, which by the way looks really strange in grade 2 Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
You're all answering that question, by the way. We've got two answers.
No. No SSH.
Oh, that's okay. We'll just not answer.
All right. And pop three.
The quiz.
All right. Anyone but Luke, because he just answered. Port number four, pop three.
21, was it? No, that's...
No.
No.
Yeah, I think that was...
25.
No.
No.
23.
No, now he's just guessing, Drew.
110?
110 is right. Good job, Gary.
What? Oh, come on, fellas. You guys could have Googled any pop, coal, and port number in the time that you guys were working.
Remember that.
25's SMTP. No, I...
That's right.
That's okay.
That's
yeah.
Right. 21 is FTP, I believe. 22 is SSH, yes, is that right?
22 is SSH, 23 is Telnet.
Yeah.
20 is FTP data if you're not running in passive mode.
Oh, okay. 20 and 21 are both FTP.
I wonder if you download like a lot of files at once with passive FTP, whether that's a passive-aggressive transfer.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. All right. Which hazard exists when working with copper cabling? Is it A, chemicals, B, copper strands, C, glass splinters, D, light? Hey, big clue in the answer, guys. Answer now.
I think it's the glass shards.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were so close. It's actually B, Drew.
What? Copper strands in the copper wire? I would have never guessed.
Yeah, sorry about that. And we have to instantly
freaking
fail you now.
Some of these questions, man. I can't believe that. That is so unfair.
Okay. Now, just a note here. The more we actually manage to focus today, the quicker this module will be over. Think of it that way.
I'm having such fun.
And if I may ask you a question, why is copper strands a hazard? Like,
because they stick in you. Like,
yeah, they can stick.
Ever stripped a cable with your teeth and then had the copper strands stick in your lip? Of course you haven't, because that wouldn't be something you would ever do studying for this class. But all of us techies who strip cable with our teeth have had this happen. And you just pick the
only real
copper
men
out
strip
of your
cable
mouth.
With their teeth.
I'm like sucking my bottom lip into my mouth.
Oh, yeah, that would hurt.
Oh, my God.
I suppose glass splinters would be worse, though, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
So the problem with glass splinters is that they can get into your bloodstream and then stick in bits of your organs and stuff, and because they don't break down, they can stick in bits of your organs and kill you. And that's usually not pleasant.
Awesome. But not. okay. The other thing is, with the copper cabling to review, if you cut them, because you cut them, little strands can just fly around and stick you in places as well. Because you'll snip it and it'll just go whoosh.
But at least if you've got the right type of magnet, they'd be easy to pull out.
No.
Copper isn't magnetic.
No, copper's
only
not.
Iron, nickel, and cobalt are magnetic. Oh, dear, oh dear.
Oh, okay.
And some hematite.
Yeah, we don't pick,
hematite
we don't
is
pick
iron.
Pennies up with magnets.
Yeah, hematite is iron ore.
We know
okay,
stuff.
Which internet technology offers a high-speed connection in a rural area but can be adversely affected by the weather?
Dial-up. Just kidding.
DSL?
Only
ISDN?
That's
satellite?
DSL.
Sorry, Grace, could you repeat the question? I managed to miss that.
Which one?
Okay, we've got internet technology that is
provides high speed,
provides
but
high
can
speed
be affected
access
by weather.
And rural access, but can be affected by weather. So cable, DSL, ISDN, or satellite, or the tin can method,
otherwise known as wireless repeat.
That's right. That is D, satellite.
I want to run the internet on the string suspended by two cans technology.
That's basically it. Let's see.
Well, didn't they find out that a homing pigeon was so faster to send some data than an email was at one point?
That would be awkward.
with satellites, it's possible.
Well, if you follow the Ted Stevens method of complaining that an email took a week to get... So he called it an internet, but his internet took too long to get to his other internet. It took a week because of all this other internets that are going around poisoning his internet.
Oh, we occasionally have like tech people with text messages that take like hours to get delivered, and people are like surprised by this. Yeah. It's like, no, it really can take 6 hours for your text to get there.
Yeah.
I've known it to take about 3 days if you're going between different networks.
Gotta go a lot of places.
Okay, we're ready for the next one.
That is one thing that annoys me about texting.
Okay, which network device can regenerate the data signal without segmenting the network? This is word for word on your Chapter 15 quiz. Is it a hub, modem, switch, or router?
No.
Try hub, multi-port repeater. Sends everything out every port except the one that has had the data sent out.
The key is that it repeats the signal.
Sorry.
It doesn't segment it. A switch segments. It repeats the signal. So that's a hub. So if you're all taking the Module 15, you all would have got that one
actually
wrong.
Actually, I'm sorry. It's on the Module 8 quiz. It's on the Module 8 quiz, so yeah. Not the 15. Actually, it could be on the 15. I don't know. But I know it's on 8. On the Braille display, come on. Okay, a network technician has been asked to install cabling in a new building. Which important task must be completed as part of the installation, other than saying, oh no? Label at least one end of every cable to identify the cable. Cordon off the area and allow only two technicians in the area. Run all cabling using only one person to avoid confusion. Label both ends of the cable to identify each cable. I think I'd go with D. Because labeling one end is going to tell you what end that is, but if you don't label the other end, you're not going to know.
That would make the most sense.
Yeah. Which path is used to access the wireless network connection using Windows XP? Start Control Panel, Administrative Tools, Network Devices. Start Control Panel, Network Connections. Start Control Panel, Network Devices. Start Control Panel, Hardware, Network Connections. Choose now.
That one's actually tricky for blind people because we usually do not run our control panel in category view. But the answer is B.
Yeah. Actually, no, they force the you to use classic ways, view actually. If you can here.
Yeah.
No,
there's another question though that is tricky like that on the final, not the final, the one of the exams that talks about category mode and XP, which is problematic because I was doing it on a 7 computer both times.
Yeah, well.
Crap.
in your actual labs, they ask you to always be in classic view.
Yeah, but the start menu changes if you put it into classic view. If you put the start menu into classic view under XP, it's actually start settings control panel.
Networking. Oh yeah.
So yeah. Actually, I'll tell you what. If anybody's had a fun tech support experience, I had to talk my mother through burning some photos with Nero burning ROM. And let me assure you, for somebody who doesn't know how to drive Nero, that is fun.
Oh, Nero's a pain. Yeah, I don't like Nero at all.
I'm going to put CD Burner XP on Fora.
Yeah.
Anybody played with CD Burner XP? It's free and accessible.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I've been
it works on Windows 7.
Which is also free and accessible.
What's How is it better than the Windows burner?
It actually does audio and data and stuff. The Windows burner won't do audio, as far as I know.
It usually the also the
it uses Media Player though.
Yeah, that's it just throws you in Media Player, and then you just jaws cursor to the Start Burn button, which is right at the bottom of the screen, and go left click, and it just does it, and it's awesome.
The other problem with the Windows XP burner is
second track length.
Yeah, the other one with the US, the one under Windows XP is, as far as I recollect, it actually burns your disks in UDF format and you don't get a choice. So if you drop it into a machine that doesn't have the UDF reader stuff installed, it's unreadable.
I think that's right, actually.
Sevens became more versions of awesome, but yeah.
Sevens is odd.
You can actually burn from ISOs in 7, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's really cool. I wish you could actually mount them in 7, that'd be even sweeter.
Yeah, that would be.
That would be cool.
In the absence of that, Demon Tools Lite does work, though. Just don't install
that. Not at mine. I'm not sure why, but...
64-bit.
No, there's a 64-bit version now. I'll help you with that at some point, Drew. It does work.
I know. I've been using Power ISO, which is smaller anyway, but it really confused me.
Yeah, I like Power ISO a lot.
Yeah. I think it's an any DVD quirk, actually, because sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It's really bizarre.
Okay. Next question. A company purchases several wireless NICs at a great price. After installing the NICs, they find that the user cannot connect to the 2.4 GHz wireless network. What is a likely cause of the problem? Sorry.
Do you need Jonathan Horsley?
Yeah, you probably do. The NICs are designed for the 802.11a standard. B. The NICs are designed for the 802.11b standard. C. The NICs are designed for the 802.11g standard. Or D. The NICs are designed for the 802.11 standard via USB. Choose now. Mm-hmm. And A is right. Because...
Couldn't it be B? Or is B also on 2.44?
B is on 2.4G.
Oh, that's right. You can do mixed mode.
You can do mixed mode, so... Okay. The next
Hang on, you didn't actually question. Finish your explanation for that one. Because A uses
works
5.
On the 5.5
so.
5 gigahertz 5.8.
A is 5.8, B, G, and one of the implementations of N is on 2.4, and then the other implementation of N is on 5.8. Watch out for that, because not all N gear, in fact a lot of it doesn't, supports 5.8 gigahertz. So, if you've got
so
a...
So can you get A slash N card?
No. You can get
BAN cards.
B-A-N and G.
Yeah.
Okay, this should be a fairly...
I'm putting a BAN card into my computer.
Alright, this should be a fairly easy one for us, alright? Which statement best describes VoIP? VoIP is a replacement for the public switch telephone network. VoIP connects IP phones to the network via the use of analog telephone adapters. VoIP is a method to enable telephone calls to be made over a data network. VoIP converts digital voice signals to standard analog information for transportation over the network. Choose now. C. Now,
oh,
the reason
I thought there was only...
D.
Okay, for some reason I thought that was choose two. I'm not sure why.
Now, D isn't right because voice signals are not digital.
Yeah.
Voice signals are analog. We don't spit ones and zeros out.
Speak for yourself.
Well, except Kerry, because he's a robot.
1001. Yeah. I was gonna say something.
Also,
oh, yeah,
it's the most
reason,
correct one.
Yeah, I just thought there were two answers for some reason. I thought it was like a choose two, and I'm not sure why I thought that. The reason why it's not a replacement, by the way, for standard telephone services, because it's not as reliable, and 911 services aren't as accurate.
That is true.
Okay, why is disabling the SSID broadcast in a wireless network considered good practice? Wireless network management is more often... Wireless network management is more efficient without SSID broadcast. SSID broadcasts limit the wireless bandwidth available for data transmission. C. This provides protection from automatic discovery of the wireless network name. Or D, broadcasting the SSID is unnecessary when the latest wireless network standards are used. Choose. And C is right, even though I poorly read that question.
We'll shoot you after lecture.
That's okay. Well, he can, I
will. Luckily, we are not on Team Talk, or we would hear a sound effect at about now.
Would I do a thing like that? No, this is on lecture.
Yeah,
I
would
never. And
you would.
No, see how nice I am? I don't shoot you after lecture. That's
Thank
the kind
you.
Of caring, sensitive young man I am.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Greg.
But hey, you know what? It might not be so bad, because then I wouldn't have to go to staff meeting.
Oh.
He's going to do a lot of editing on this one.
I'd make you go instead.
I'd anyway. Go. But I don't think
that
you
could actually make things quite hilarious.
You don't do that good. Anyway. Which command would a technician use to view names and URLs that have been recently resolved to IP addresses? Is it A, net session? B, net view? C, upconfig slash dot display DNS? Or nslookup slash DNS? Anyone else want to go? Come on, guys. Anyone else? There you go. It's D.
It blindly is... follow my exam.
Yeah.
That doesn't work, though.
Doesn't it?
Not under 7.
Yeah.
Actually, I cheated. I went to the command line and typed really fast.
Yeah, it says cannot find slash DNS under 7.
That's not nice.
NS
maybe just NS
slash
lookup.
I said that to me too, actually, but I figured
okay,
it was
maybe
best,
I'm wrong.
The closest one.
It might be maybe B.
It's NBT stat.
What's the
NBT stat slash dash resolve, which I didn't.
Yeah, that'll
look.
Also, you didn't even give him the right answer.
Yeah, that would help.
Wow. What did you put it 5 and you only read 4?
Something like that, yeah.
She's sort of cursing madly here and reading random bits.
I am not.
I was thinking at the time, like, none of them sound quite right, although I do like
yeah,
how
I'm just
pick
like, where's
one
the
one picks mine.
I'm looking at this
you
on the Flash curriculum. I'm looking at this on the Flash curriculum
okay.
right now, because I haven't pulled it. And it's all of these answers, remember, are buried in unlabeled graphical buttons.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That one hid. And it hid very well, and I didn't see it.
Okay, so listen to future instructors. Do pull this stuff out of the Flash and pull some notes together the night before, hey? Okay, moving on.
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, this computer's fast enough to actually let me do this, so...
Yeah, but you should hear how madly you're belting keys in the background here.
Which command would a technician use to view names and URLs that have been recently... Oh, I've
you
already
just read
this.
Okay, so I think we need something stronger than that garlic and horseradish.
I think you people need some drop.
We do.
Yeah. If you want to be bothered with virtual audio cable, you can, but I can't.
God,
okay.
No.
Which protocol is used to assign an IP address to a wireless NIC? Or seriously, any other NIC? Can anyone just tell us what this is? Does anybody know? Because... this is something we probably should all know.
DHCP?
What's the what
to
connect to an
NIC? DHCP is absolutely right. IP address.
Get an IP. Yeah.
DHCP
don't
is
know that
right.
I
thought that was right.
Yeah, if we don't know that by now, well...
So that is actually a protocol.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sweet.
Dynamic host protocol.
Dynamic host control protocol.
Control?
That's it.
Yeah.
I think so. A technician uses FTP server to store backup configuration files. And then someone went offline. Network diagrams and relevant notes. While at a customer site and using the internet to access the FTP server to transfer files, the technician is called to a meeting with the customer. Upon returning to the computer, the technician notices that the FTP connection is no longer active. What is one solution to avoid this problem? The technician can change the FTP server timeout length. The technician can configure the FTP client for active mode. The technician can configure the FTP client for longer block transfers. Or the technician can configure the FTP server to require that all files being transferred be compressed. Choose now. And he's absolutely right.
And I disagree with that 100%.
Do you?
Yes, because what'll actually happen, I've done this, okay, but A is the correct answer, people. A is the correct answer. So if I ask you this question, A is the correct answer. But if you leave a network transfer inactive to an FTP server for longer than 10 or 15 minutes, the network address translator you are going through will time out the control connection. So even if you increase the timeout on the FTP server end, unless you're sending keeper lives, you'll actually lose your connection regardless. So don't try this at home. And in fact, I had a problem where people were uploading files to me, but because the control connection was inactive for more than 15 minutes, as soon as the transfer had completed, the actual control connection would time out, and then their FTP program would drop the bundle. And it doesn't happen with
Linux and
real FTP clients, because they actually send keeper lives to keep the... Because I don't know whether you guys know, but if you leave a connection inactive on a network address translator, it will actually be timed out, which is why you'll get kicked off IRC after 10 or 15 minutes, unless something's going on the channel.
Most of the clients I've seen have had that keeper live option.
Unless you've got IDENT on, I think.
No, IDENT's something else, but... I don't know whether they've fixed it in 7, but I know under XP, and especially even with older versions of Qt FTP, it didn't actually send the keeper lives.
Well, in 7, you can set
just sit on IRC for hours with nothing happening, and it was fine. Are you saying that's a client thing?
Yeah, the client's got to send the keeper lives, and I think Merck fixed that back in about version 4.6.
Yeah. I imagine it also depends on where you, like, if you're behind a router or if your other person running is behind a router as well. That actually happened.
Well, we actually had a problem we actually had a problem where if you left a connection for more than 60 seconds, it would actually time out the SSH, and we used to swear and curse about it because you'd walk away to grab a coffee or whatever and your SSH would
totally
be knocked out.
Yeah,
not cool.
Yeah, that's not fun. No.
Hey, guys. What is the primary purpose of SSH? To display web pages securely? To translate a domain name to an IP address? To transfer files securely from a client to a server? Or to provide a secure protocol for remotely accessing a network device? Choose now. I think I'd go with D myself, actually. Yeah.
According to that thing that Will put across.
Huh? Yeah.
So what am I thinking of?
you're thinking of SFTP, I think.
Okay.
You can do files, but the primary purpose is accessing network devices securely.
Okay.
It's not its only purpose, because you can do SSH to transfer files.
Okay. That was actually a random bit of trivia, how the one of the tool singles got leaked. They put it up on an FTP server for the radios. It was up unprotected for 3 minutes. That's all it took, 3 minutes.
Wow.
How would that be possible? Did someone
it was on an anonymous FTP site? Because some radio producers are really stupid, and they wouldn't know how to fetch it down if it had a username and password, and you would have had to communicate the username and password.
They're releasing it, because it was the label releasing it early to the radio station so that they could play it before the street data thing and whatnot, and they could put it up in their rotations, and 3 minutes.
The only thing that would be worse than that would be tweeting the FTP URL. I mean, come on.
Well, no, I'm wondering how people found the tool album. I mean, did they have, like, alarms?
Port scan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There are people scanning the internet for open stuff all the time, and in fact,
if you
actually have an open relay for more than about 30 seconds, you will be helping hundreds and thousands of men with their anatomical issues by relaying spam for the bad guys. So you have to make sure things are locked down.
And if you if they know the radio station IP address, then they can just monitor that one, because the instant they open up a connection, they know it's just something that they're going to want.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and that's not the kind of charity work and help that, you really need to be giving, so.
No.
Okay, so today we are going to talk about security and data loss and protecting ourselves from all of that. You want to have a compromise between the best security and the most affordable security. You want to protect against data loss or damage to software and equipment. you and the organization's management should work together to plan a security policy that makes sure that the data and equipment have been protected against all security threats. A security
I would
policy...
add the most reasonable security as well.
Well, that's why we say to make sure you get the most reasonable security. It's a trade-off between the best and what you can afford. It's the best you can get for your money. So, and we don't need a moat with sharks in it with a drawbridge to get over to the company headquarters, because that's definitely going to cost you more than you're probably willing to pay. So that usually
that's
takes care of... That usually takes
that's
care
the reasonable
of
I meant, the ludicrous reasonable.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless your company is, of course, their castle!
Or Microsoft. And the only reason I say that is because I worked for a call center which implemented a new security policy with T-Mobile, where basically your logon password for your computer would change, randomly expire in 60 days. And if you didn't know that it was going to expire, if you didn't happen to be at work that day, and or the last 3 days before it conked out, then you had to call IT and have them reset the password. Apparently there have been studies to show that a lot of people have had to circumvent IT policies just to get their work done.
Yeah.
Man. That wouldn't surprise
Absolutely.
Me, yeah.
Yeah, use common sense, guys. Really.
That was even before
IT
web nonsense.
Don't be that IT department, I beg.
Yeah. Well,
that was even before web nonsense or web sense started blocking Hotmail, which we needed to do our jobs. Yeah, that was a great one. At least before MSN did.
Why would you need Hotmail?
Because they troubleshoot Hotmail. They were Microsoft.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were doing email support from them, so they didn't want other agents to access it, so they threw us all on websites. Yeah, and the guy in the Philippines is like, oh, you can use this proxy, but we didn't give it to you, and dial-up would have been faster. In fact, I almost thought about just hooking my computer up to the phone and getting a dial-up
account. At that point, you might as well just get the public list of proxies from various places I wouldn't know about and go faster. That's crazy.
You've got to be careful with that, because sometimes the actual phone lines inside an organization are ADSL, and if you not ADSL, they're ISDN, and if you plug a modem into an ADSL, an ISDN, the smoke pours out of it. It's quite spectacular.
Oh, wow.
And if that's internal,
that
that's your system board.
True. That would have at least had some dealt with some monotony.
Yeah, that would be entertainment.
Interesting. Because of what Carius just explained, a number of computer manufacturers for a while were providing things, I think Dell called it digital line detect, and basically having programs that if the modem in the computer detected that you had plugged it into a digital line, it would say, hey, take this out right now! Would try and warn you something.
But you know what, if Aiden would have done
Wouldn't that end up really being just more like, take this out right now!
I don't know.
If it were Aiden, yes, smoke would be pouring out of his computer, because it's Aiden, and computers like to smoke for him.
Like, does it actually stop the thing from blowing up, or does it, like, throw a red warning for 2 seconds before
You know what,
it
I don't actually
anyway.
Know. But I know it's designed to prevent something related to plugging into it.
Or does it just do what it has time to do? Durr! And then die.
It plays a file, like a sound file. Oh my god, take it out! Big red klaxon.
Sure, it wouldn't blow.
Okay, there's a chapter here, people.
Through it anyway.
Sorry, let's keep going through this chapter. Your security policy is a comprehensive statement about the level of security required and how the security will be achieved. So, if you are a technician and you're working for a company, you will probably be involved in writing up policies for your customers and organizations. When you create a policy, you should ask the following question to determine the security factors. Is the computer located at a home or business? And why might we ask this question?
To get a general idea of how the computer is going to be used and how important security is going to be for the group of computers. Like, if it's a big business network, you'd obviously need more security than Granny's home email checker.
Another thing that we don't usually think of is the vulnerabilities of home computers. Home computers are more vulnerable to wireless intrusion because they usually have a wireless network. business computers also have a high threat of network intrusion because of users abusing their access privileges. At home, the worst thing that's going to happen is 8-year-old Samantha goes on a naughty site, which is pretty bad, but on a business network, lots worse can happen if access privileges are abused, like confidential information being seen. Is there full-time internet access? Of course, the longer that your computer is hooked up to the internet, the greater chance of attacks from other infected computers. A computer access
seems to me to be kind of a two-pronged question. Like, is there full internet access, and does there need to be full internet access?
Is there internet access all the time, basically? Or some businesses shut down their internet during the night. So that's what they're kind of getting at here. If you're on the internet, you should be configured with a firewall and antivirus and spyware software. I'd say even if you don't think you're going to be on the internet, you probably should do this in case for some reason you are.
Here's a thought, though, actually. One of the things you do when you go away, and it's something that a lot of people don't do, is if you're not going to be there, shut down all your wireless access points, because who's going to use them? Like, if you've got separate wireless access points like we have, turn it off. Unless you're actually providing access to the internet remotely, like access to your mail servers, which is what we tend to do, even if you do that, shut the wireless down, because you're not home to use it.
By the way, you were talking about
virus definitions and stuff. Is it, someone on Twitter said that Viper was flagging JAWS as some kind of a Trojan or rogues program. Does anyone know if that's actually true?
Running Viper.
Yeah, it does. It flags it in the firewall because phone's home.
For their update.
It says, hey, this is happening. This is phoning home. Do you want it to?
No, actually, it doesn't phone home. Okay. It talks to a multicast address looking for a wireless server. I don't think it actually phones home.
I thought it did.
No, it's a 224 address, which is a multicast on your local network.
They check for updates now. But
yeah, so
they
does
can do that as well.
Phoning home.
The license server does a bunch of stuff.
We actually own Viper, but Grace just hasn't installed it because she got sick of fighting with the firewall, which is something I did 6 months ago. I'm just like, no, like, we paid for this 5-user license and we're just not using it anymore because like, the firewall is just too much of a pain.
It's a nice firewall, don't get me wrong. But
yeah, just don't try to do it with VMware.
They incorporated... is this what Curio has become? That's very sad. Because Curio was great.
It is good, but the firewall can get in your way, because like if you install VMware, you come up with two network interfaces, and you've got to keep allowing stuff on the interfaces and stuff. So Viper is quite good, and it is quite accessible, and it is quite cheap, but the firewall really gets in your way if you're me and you know what you're doing, and you do lots of networky things.
All right, is the computer a laptop? Why would we care if the computer's a laptop? What does that matter to us?
Anyone remember that news story where the cure for cancer was on the laptop and it got stolen and nobody had backed it up?
No.
I did hear... I never actually read it, but I think I heard that story.
Yeah, there was a cure for cancer on one of the laptops or something and the laptop got stolen and nobody had actually backed it up somewhere. Carbonite was tweeting it because they were trying to advertise their backup service.
Wow.
Oh, that's right.
To be fairness, I feel like if we are at a point where the only reason why we don't have a cure to cancer is because someone stole the laptop, it's not that far away, you know?
There are tons more reasons, but I won't make myself sound crazy. But, I mean, laptops can be dropped off in bars, and there have been stories of, I think once was a British Ministry of Social Services or something, lost about 2 million people's names, addresses, and social insurance numbers because it was on a laptop that was lifted out of a car, I think.
Well, that's where I liked the computer crime lab in, I don't know if it's this chapter, in chapter 9. That was really interesting, where you had to go find an incident.
Yeah, stuff. That's 9.1.
That is so freaking fascinating.
It really is. Okay. Physical security is an issue with laptop computers because they can walk away. Of course, there are measures that you can use, such as cable locks, to do this. So now we're going to talk about a security plan, and then if we've got time, we will all sit down and do this worksheet that we do every year in 16, and we'll all mark everybody who's here off on it, and it'll be all happy, and you won't have to do it.
Actually, I was just very quickly, there was actually this incident where this lecturer was setting up to do a lecture, And they were standing in the room, and they turned away to, like, wipe the whiteboard, and some student ran in and stole the laptop off the desk and ran out of the lecture theatre. So, yeah, physical security can be important.
Especially if you can't see, it's even more important, guys.
Like the woman who had her iPhone taken in Ottawa? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying, if you're blind, make sure you know where your laptop is. Put your bag where you can find it. You know, just simple stuff.
It probably goes to stands to reason that you've got to be a bit more careful if you can't see, because you do have to know where stuff is, otherwise it can go missing.
I'm very protective of the bag my braille senses in, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. And if you're really, really paranoid, you get a little mini Bluetooth keyboard, and you plug your headphones in and into your iThing or your walk or whatever you're controlling, and all you've got is the Bluetooth keyboard for them to snatch off out of your hands. And if they snatch that, that's $12.
There are good pickpockets everywhere, Grace, and believe me, they can take your bum bag off before you go.
Oh, absolutely.
Or whatever you happen
although
to have
if your headphones, if your headphones stop chirping, that would kind of give you an idea of, to reach out and grab.
Yeah. Alright, a security policy is a collection of rules, guidelines, and checklists that probably belong in your handbook for your organization. As I said, you'll probably work with the managers to develop these rules and guidelines. It includes the following elements. It defines an acceptable computer use statement for an organization, that is, what people are allowed to do and not to do. It identifies the people permitted to use the computer equipment in an organization. The janitor may not need to do this. It identifies the devices that are permitted to be installed on a network, as well as the condition of the installation, as in who gets to do it. Modems and wireless access points are examples of hardware that could expose the network to attacks. It defines the requirements necessary for data to remain confidential on a network, who has access, how it is protected. It determines a process for employees to acquire access to equipment and data. That's what we're going to be setting up today in our staff meeting, who has access to what data and how to acquire access to it. This process may require the employee to sign an agreement regarding the company rules. It also lists the consequences for failure to comply. And you want to have this written out as clearly as possible. What you can do, what's allowed, what isn't allowed, and what happens if you do something that isn't allowed. The security policy also provides detailed information for issues in case of an emergency. Steps to take after a breach in security, who to contact in an emergency, information to share with customers, vendors, and the media, secondary locations to use in an evacuation, steps to take after emergency is over, including the priority of services to be restored. A security policy has to be enforced and followed by all employees to be effective, because if you don't enforce it, nobody's going to care about your security policy. All right, I'm going to pull up this worksheet, and we are going to talk about the questions that it asks, because it makes absolutely no sense to do this particular worksheet on your own. Yeah, I'm getting the worksheet up. All right. We're doing 16.1.1. This is the security policy information. All right, so in Kavi, who do you think would be responsible for the network equipment in the classroom?
The instructor.
Absolutely. Carrie is actually the person who's responsible for all of the network equipment in Kavi, because we have a lot of it. We've got all sorts of wireless routers and very complex Cisco network equipment in the server rooms. So who do you think is responsible for the computers in the classroom? Anyone?
The instructor in that classroom?
Yep. In our classroom, it is Carrie and I, and actually, sometimes the students. When you're in our class at Kavi, if you're not using your own network, you are assigned a computer workstation. And basically, if any updates or anything need to be done on that computer while you are there, that's your responsibility to take care of that computer. So, the person or persons who would be responsible for assigning network resources then?
That would be Carrie, I guess.
Yeah, that would be Carrie, because he's in charge of all of the networky stuff. Now, here's a very interesting one. What internet sites do you think in a classroom you should have permission to access? This is not just the Kavi classroom, in any classroom.
Any site applicable for research purposes.
Now, here's a really interesting point that I think we talked about last year. Do you guys think Twitter and Facebook should be accessible from a classroom setting?
No.
No.
You'd all get so much more work done if I blocked access to Twitter, if you're in the local academy.
I sort of agree, and however, I sort of disagree. Yes, I was going to say, however, you can get a lot of information.
That's true. You get information. You could ask questions and find things out from people. You could also check the statuses of various things. There's also a study done that say if people are allowed a little bit of slack in their days and aren't working 100% of the time, maybe they can go play their game of solitaire or something. Actually, a little bit more work does get done. But that has to be balanced with, you know, as long as the game of solitaire isn't, you know, the kind on Facebook that installs 1,000 different Flash applets that could mess up the computer.
A lot of people, say, for example, in workplaces, unblock access to Facebook in Twitter and stuff in lunch hour. But I must say, I have really toyed with the idea of blocking Facebook at work because I think a lot of people would get a lot more work done. And then people could request for it to be unblocked when they actually needed to do something on it. And would you believe that would drop the usage quite a lot?
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem that we have with that where I work is yes, you can ask for information and ask questions. But just because someone tells you that over Facebook or anything like that doesn't necessarily make it, in fact, the truth.
No, that's absolutely true.
No, but they could tell you where to look. And I mean, you know, if I was in a classroom and had to ask, say, you know, I had a networking problem, or in a workplace and had a networking problem and had to ask, you know, say, Carrie a question because he knows everything, I could DM him over Twitter or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a really good... And I have. Has anyone ever had this problem with a computer? And you'll get answers back fairly instantly. It's like your own personal little help desk. And some of the information you can get is actually really good. And some of it isn't. But
the other problem is with that, and it's not so much of a problem for Kavi, but a lot of law firms have had to block access to Facebook and stuff due to information leakage.
That makes sense.
Yes, it does.
But there should be a way for it should definitely be controlled at the or controllable by machine by machine basis. I mean, for example, for us, it was very difficult when we worked at NCO at the T-Mobile. It was very difficult to get access to Hotmail because the site policy was to block Hotmail. But we needed that to do their job to do our jobs, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it really wouldn't if our computers had just gotten rechanged, it wouldn't really work properly. So
yeah,
it was. It has to be at least easily able to be controlled at each machine, or for each machine.
Absolutely, if that's possible. For Kavi, it's not such a big deal for that reason. Okay, what type of internet site should definitely not be accessible on a work or school network?
Porn sites.
Yep, porn.
Says containing spyware.
Absolutely. If you can... Now, that's a hard one to actually get right, because you don't know what sites are going to contain spyware. It's better to actually block your actual... or have a good spyware program than to try to block every site that has spyware. Anything illegal? porn, probably a no. Anything really, really inappropriate.
We had an interesting problem where people tried to put web filters in, and the web filters were actually tripping out on sites that contained the words wristwatch and Scunthorpe, because there's a naughty word hidden in both of those.
At our school, we had a crazy network administrator, and somebody was looking up a chicken breast recipe, and they couldn't go to look up chicken breast because it had the word breast in it. And so we had to go down to the IT room and ask this guy basically to fix this, and he was summarily asked what his problem was. But yeah.
And of course, that's not even getting into a high school where a geography teacher was trying to look up, or a student was trying to look up the word hot spring, or geysers, and the teacher said, "Oh, just look up hot springs." And of course, every time a student even gets or hovers over a site, a red flag goes up, and if they access a site, well, a letter gets sent to the school superintendent. There were a lot of red flags. When they tried to look up hot spring, same thing happened to an English teacher who a student asked about why do some girls get hairy legs, and then she said, "Well, look it up." No, you don't do that in a library.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so let's think of some activities that could damage the network or computers attached to the networks. Can anyone think of something that could damage it? Your computer.
Dial up modem in an ISDN line.
Yes, well, that we just learned about
today.
Yeah,
we just talked about that.
We're just going to go down the list of people, actually, and everybody's going to, if everybody's here, be able to name something that would harm a computer or a network. So, Aiden's already gone. How about Drew? Drew, what could harm a computer or network? Okay, well, I guess he's not awake. Gary, can you think of anything?
I would think that possibly some online gaming sites might contain spyware or bad ads or something.
Absolutely. You can get spyware or viruses possibly through online games, or just nasty toolbars that will obscure your browser. Okay, Luke, your turn.
Well, I was going to say viruses. I'd say, like, some emails. A lot of emails.
Having emails with lots of attachment or bad links. Marshall?
I haven't the vaguest idea.
Okay. Well, how about thumb drives? If you allow people to bring in thumb drives, they might have that screensaver that the secretary thinks is so cute might also install something not so cute. Randy?
Thumb drives itself.
Yeah.
Some like torrent or file sharing sites?
Yep. Oh, definitely file sharing. You can get all sorts of inbuilt nasty viruses.
BearShare was a bad one. We used to have people installing BearShare into... Well, any file sharing network is dangerous. It's just...
LimeWire,
LimeWire, BearShare, Nutella... Yeah, a lot of those would... Well, a lot of them were dangerous because the software publishers were actually seeding viruses in there. So they'd give you this thing that looked like Photoshop that totaled your computer.
I have another one.
Okay.
When you send a 1 meg file, but to 350, 400 people on a network, it tends to cause problems.
Yeah, that would be bandwidth. What? That would clog up your network real good.
Well, they actually had to put some... policies in at the Tamworth City Council because people were going to the pound, taking pictures of cute dogs, and then emailing the pictures of the cute dogs to all the employees going, "Save this poor dog that is about to be killed." And, I mean, while it was a good idea, it did sort of cause bandwidth problems and storage problems.
Absolutely. Okay, and the last question. Do you think that in a classroom, in our classroom, do you think anyone else besides the network administrator should be installing wireless and network devices? Why or why not?
Not unless they're instructed on how.
Yeah.
And authorized to know the system on how to do it.
Yeah. Oh, welcome back, Drew.
Thank you. I said something a little earlier.
I was just thinking of suggesting Enable India.
I thought about it, but didn't.
I'm sure.
Anyway, yes, I think in our case that we should be a little more lax on the only the network administrator should install network devices, because yes, this is a learning environment and people will have to learn how to do these things. So, yes.
And the other thing is, though, if your student is not supposed to be learning how to do it right now, they probably shouldn't be just randomly do it.
Oh, absolutely not. What did you want to say, Gary?
I didn't say anything.
I think that in a working environment like what... I think that like in a working environment like where I am, as far as like law enforcement and stuff, I think who installs hardware and software should be limited, but I agree with you on the being more lax in a learning environment.
Absolutely. In a work environment, it's very important to put in your security policy exactly who's authorized to install what.
It's interesting that you say law enforcement, because when I was in tech support and doing phone support, I would ask people, especially in Georgia, who set up their computers, and they would often respond, the sheriff's department. So I don't know if there was a certain sheriff's department in Georgia that like had gave free tech services to the public or how that worked, but I just thought that was very interesting.
That's interesting.
It actually helped people set up computers.
You want to have in your security policy hardware and equipment that can be used to prevent theft, vandalism, and data loss. Physical security involves four interrelated aspects: access, data, infrastructure, and the physical computer. So access, you want to restrict access to the premises for the following. You could have fences, security hardware, to protect the network infrastructure, such as cabling, telecommunications equipment, and network devices. You can have a secure telecommunications room. You can have wireless networks detect unauthorized access and let you know. Kerry actually has a program that lets him know when a new MAC address comes onto the wireless network, and it emails him. What's that actually called?
Any MAC address under any of the network at all. It's called ARPWatch, and it sends you an email when new MAC addresses turn up on your network, which serves two purposes. One, it tells you if somebody's connected, and two, it stops you hunting around DHCP logs for the fact that somebody just came on with a new MAC address that you need to, say, add to a particular restriction zone or something.
A hardware face that is a firewall, not just your router. Network management system that detects changes in the wiring and patch panels. This can do two things. It can tell you if somebody's tampering with your stuff or if a cable or device has just died. You can protect individual computers with the following. You can use cable locks, laptop docking stations, which you can lock over to the desk or whatever. Lockable cases. They're actually cases that you can lock two things and actually lock shut. And you can protect data that protect data with devices that protect against unauthorized access or theft of media with the following: lockable hard case carriers, secure storage and transport of backup media, USB security dongles, so if you don't have that dongle, you're not getting into your computer. Okay, we talked about having the right security mix. This is the factors that that will give you the most effective security equipment to use to secure equipment and data, and they are the following. How is the equipment used? So what are you going to do with your equipment? Does it need to be moved, or is it going to stay in one place, and do a lot of people need to access it, or is it only one person? Where is the computer equipment located? Is it going to be located out in the open, or can it actually be secured away? What user access to data is required? So who needs to access the data? Do a lot of people need to use it, or is it just one or two? For example, a computer in a busy public place such as a library or internet cafe requires additional protection from theft and vandalism, because a lot of people may be using it. In a busy call center, a server may need to be secured in a locked equipment room, because nobody's really going to need access to it, except for the server administrator. If you need to use a laptop computer in a public place, this is important for us, you can use a security dongle, which ensures that the system is locked if you and your laptop are separated. So nobody can use it unless they have that dongle. Are there any questions on physical security?
There are also things like fingerprint readers that you can either get or come install on some computers.
Those can help, but we have to remember that Mythbusters actually went through and made molds of people's fingers and were able to get in to their computers. And also, if someone's really sinister, they can just go ahead and cut your finger off.
That was actually in Blake 7, okay. If anybody's ever watched that. They actually chopped one of the guards' hands off to put against the sensor.
I thought there was a pressure or temperature thing so that the hand had
Angels
to be...
Angels and Demons or something as well, or was it...
Yeah, they pulled out his eye.
That was the eye, yeah.
No, it's not, it's not temperature sensitive.
Welcome to the Sisto Academy for movies.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, look, seeing as the people on Mythbusters were actually able to make a mold of the finger and that worked, and that wasn't even skin...
I think they've tidied a lot of that up since then, because funnily enough, Mythbusters exposing that might have caused the manufacturers to tighten things up a little bit. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
Just maybe.
I recall early on with the biometrics that people were saying it was so easy to get around. Like, you could even just, like... The fingerprint would be put down, and the fingerprint would remain smudged on the fingerprint reader, so anyone else could come along and just tap it, and it would work. If they did it the right way.
Wow. That's interesting.
Interesting story about Tom.
Yeah, it's probably not that way. I would hope it's not that way anymore, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is something interesting story about physical security stuff. I think I heard this from AUT. I don't think it was through here. Tell me if it was, and I'm repeating something. But they got sick of their projectors being stolen, and someone tried to steal this projector, and because they'd lost like several of them in the past, they actually like pretty much built it into the frame of the room. So this person thought, oh, it's bolted in. That's cool. We'll break through like a piece of jib board or something to get to it. You know, no problem. And so they broke through this jib board, and then they still couldn't get it. And so they basically grabbed this thing and pulled, and it pretty much brought down half the ceiling because of how well it was actually attached into the room. And so, of course, they come in next morning to the classroom, and there's plaster dust everywhere. There's bits of jib all over the desk. There's, like, the frame, like, the steel-enforced frame in the ceiling was bent where they've yanked on this projector. So, I mean, the projector was written off.
Was the projector still there?
Yeah, the projector was obviously physically written off, but the projector was still there.
Wow.
That guy must have been on super speed or something.
They attacked it with, like, a crowbar or something, and... Yeah. So, as I say, you know, the projector was munted, but it was still there.
Going back to biometrics for a second, I was reading a book about customer service, and I don't know whether this is actually the case, but at the time this book was written, Bell Canada had a system where they had had voice print of you, and so you would say, at Bell, my voice is my password, and it would try and figure out who you were in addition to whatever other methods they used.
They
Wasn't
had
that
on
also on
Sneaker?
My yes. voice is my password.
A fantastic
Verify.
Movie. Everyone should watch.
There is a DVS version. I strongly recommend it, actually.
Yes.
Sneakers.
I haven't seen it.
Yes, it's wonderful.
It's actually, I've got it, Grace, so we can watch that. That's a must. The Sneakers, we're watching that later. Okay, so we've got the DVS version. And yes, the scene where the blind guy drives the car is funny, okay? Just so we can get that over and out of the way.
Okay, security. Do we have anything else on hardware before we go on to software security stuff?
Some of those hardware.
From underground cabling, maybe?
Yep, or using plenum. Ah, okay. Just curious, because it was very passionate.
I'm typing at my XY. Hey, what's the word? Scandal, scandal, scandal. I'm MSNing my XY.
Yeah.
He's just sitting over here banging on that keyboard.
About
like,
the staff meeting, okay? Nobody get excited, right?
Is she coming?
No, of course not. But we're just talking about the changes we made to QCAT.org and stuff.
Oh, okay,
so that,
cool.
Hey, instant poll. Does everybody want a thing where you can just go to student.qcat.org and it'll just drop you into student resources? Anybody want that? Because I think I'm going to make that happen.
Yeah.
That'd be, yes, I wouldn't mind, yeah. That'd be kind of...
Are you aware that you can go to www.qcat.org/student.php? That'll do it too.
Yeah, I already do that.
Too much letters, get, remember...
No, it's not.
Then
I want ite1.qcat.org, actually.
No, we don't need to go that... No,
yeah, I
don't want
to think about it. /module16/16part1.qcat.org. I mean, how many do we need?
Oh, jeez. Well, getting into the actual homepage for your curriculum might be kind of nice, but other than that. Okay.
Yeah, I think students.qcat.org would be
pretty that's cool. A definite.
Labs.qcat/i1 wouldn't be bad, but that would involve a lot of directory.
No, it wouldn't. There's an SRM manager to make that go. Yeah, we just use the server root manager to make an alias that bounces you through to that. That's feasible. The other thing we were looking at doing was putting landing pages on things like ITE1 and stuff where they don't change, so you don't get hoiked into an index as soon as you hit ITE1. Yeah.
I like the indexes, actually.
I do, too.
I do,
I
too. It's
like
old school.
I like
it's
knowing
still
when
a little kind of like, whoa, index, hello. Yeah.
We could get rid of the actual
no
links
need
so that
do
you
anything.
Don't have to actually... You can actually... Because I don't know whether anybody knows, and I don't think anybody's ever used this, but if you click the links on the column headers on any of the index pages, it'll sort by that actual thing, so you can sort by name, date,
yeah.
or size.
You actually can,
but
yeah.
Well, well, we
yeah.
can make those things go away.
Yeah, those can go. I just do like seeing the last updated times. That's about
No, but that's on the whole folder, and I could touch them and confuse you. If I actually make a landing page, you'll still be able to see the last updated times inside the actual folders. So if you go into labs or whatever, you'll still see all the times in there. But the last update time on the folders don't make any sense because I could be touching or renaming something as soon as
I... fair enough. This is true. Okay, anyway, we probably actually want to talk about security, because that's what we're here for, but still, those things.
There's a password on our course note lecture stuff. Just thought I'd flip that. Actually, I'm thinking of putting a security on the text notes so that you've actually got to log in for those as well.
No, that wouldn't kill anybody. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Come on, free download manager.
I was going to say a hesitant nay to that one, but if you were still
the reason
in
we have
poll.
To do the we are. The reason we have to do it though, and the reason we should do
it's
it is because
stuff.
That stuff is technically copyrighted, and we probably really should be. And if Cisco ever found out we weren't, we could be in serious trouble.
Come on,
web crawler will still let you suck down every lab on the site. In fact. I'm actually going to zip up a zip where you just pull one zip and you've got every lab. So, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, fellas.
Yeah, so the labs won't be password protected. Those are okay. All right, well, then you're going to be able to go and download it. It's as easy as that.
Yeah, I
really
did that a few months ago, remember, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So does that make sense to everybody? All right. So we've got security software, we've spoken about security hardware. And good evening, Curtis. The following products and software applications can be used to protect network devices. We've got software firewalls. These filter incoming data and are built into Windows. We've got the Windows firewall. You can also get something like the Viper firewall, which is actually pretty nice. And it tells you every single thing that tries to happen on your firewall and where it's going, which is kind of interesting to see, but then it gets really annoying. We've got intrusion detection. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just made me think. I should have asked before. What's the difference between a hardware firewall and a software firewall? I know the hardware firewall is an actual device, but I mean, does it allow as much control, or does it notify you if your computer tries to?
Oh, it's it allows more control.
Basically, hardware firewalls actually have a physical separation of network interfaces, and there's you can actually do things, you know, my train of thought's been derailed. Software firewall, you can actually have two network interfaces. Some of them just use one, which is not very secure, and the hardware firewall is actually a separate box. And because it's actually a hardware firewall, and because that's all it's doing, it's actually better for high load situations, because if you, like, decide that you've got a software firewall and you start playing in the dark, you might not have enough CPU cycles for your firewall.
Alright, so you're...
You're almost inaudible, sorry, Kurt. Skype's done horrible things to your microphone again, probably. Wow, they've got a USB screen that's powered by a USB port. Okay, that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about, but that is kind of funky. 15.6 inch one, useful. Too.
But if it was a
that
USB
would be useful.
Screen...
Yeah, most of them do.
Yeah.
It's only the Windows one that doesn't check...
He said most any firewalls check ingoing and out, incoming and outgoing traffic for the recording.
Yeah, they
typed it
just to make it better. And SP2, actually.
Yeah, it was a question.
The one before SP2 didn't exist.
But it was a chat and nobody actually said what the question was, and on the recording
that
we
was
don't
the
hear
cha- that was the question. Are there any firewalls that check incoming and outgoing traffic? Yes, there are. The Windows 7 one, I think, does by default, but the one in XP, SP2 and stuff only checked outgoing stuff. It didn't actually check incoming stuff. It just denied it.
No, it's the other way around. It checks incoming, doesn't check outgoing.
Ah, that's right. Yep, you're right.
I think the one before SP2 did it the opposite way, which is really dumb.
Can you kill Chris Kreiser?
Oh, yeah. Here, let me make him die.
Thanks.
All gone.
Yay.
No, there was not one before SP2. The firewall came in SP2 and was pretty ridiculous until they fine-tuned it a bit.
Did
it? Oh, I thought it came in SP1.
They had some pathetic thing.
It was there,
not even worth bothering
but it was under network connections where nobody knew to look for it.
It seems to get mad when things try to access the internet for the computer, like when top speed did or whatever, so it seems like it only gets mad at outgoing connection.
No, the 7.1...
It just doesn't tell you.
Yeah, the 7.1 doesn't tell you that it's blocking inbound connections, but it does.
You can look in lots of stuff, but it doesn't automatically tell you. Just because there's so many of them. Just randomly pinged by the internet. Also, if you've got good NAT, then a lot of those should go away anyway.
Okay.
I wonder if a StarWars is accessible. Probably not.
If what is?
It's a software firewall, but they let you, like, it's a hardware firewall that they give you, but they let you run the software firewall on, like, a Windows PC that you're not using.
Okay, interesting. All right.
But I think it has its own OS and everything, so probably.
Yeah, it might not be so accessible. Okay, intrusion detection system monitors and reports on changes in program code and unusual network activity. The intrusion detection system on Viper is ridiculous. It will let you know that remote code has been executed in seriously every program, and it's nuts, and you have to turn it off because it's so disruptive, unfortunately.
A lot of the mainstream, like Symantec and stuff, does that too. Mostly they just want you to know that, hey, I'm doing stuff!
Thanks. Yeah. Application and OS patches updates applications and the operating system to repair security breaches that are discovered. Yes. So you've got all of these little things that you'll see in Microsoft. A security issue has been identified that will allow a hacker to take control of your computer. Install this.
Did anybody notice, and if anybody actually looks down the list of 90 critical updates, about 84 of them all allow a remote attacker to gain control of your computer. I find that a little bit disturbing myself.
Yeah, that's what all of them are pretty much.
And then the other six fix the media player forever. Or something because they bungled their DRM stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say about that is there is a really useful piece of software that you guys might be interested in, so Google for it. It's called Windows Updates Downloader, and it makes you allows you to make a CD/DVD of all of the updates you need to apply to a machine on every operating system from 2000 through to 7, and it does 32-bit and 64-bit. So you basically make the DVD, chuck it in the machine, walk away, and when you come back, it's installed all the updates.
But what about my 98 machine? Just kidding.
You're not taking that off the internet.
You're not actually supported under Windows Windows Update anymore.
For everyone's benefit.
Fair enough. What about
time bomb waiting to happen? Put it in a museum, please.
Microsoft actually will send you a CD, I believe, if you ask for it, of all the Windows updates to the current. At least we could order it in the tech support site or give the customer a link to order one, which I found kind of interesting. Were you saying all the critical updates for Windows were the ones that took control of the computer? Maybe updating isn't such a good idea?
No. All of the ones that they fix problems where people could take control of your machine.
To be fair, they do make the distinction. You don't see it often, but they do make the distinction between control and complete control.
And compromise.
Yes, may compromise doesn't mean you actually get complete control. So there is sort of three things. It's may compromise, gain control, or gain complete control. But
that's all they really tell you, which is probably smart on their part.
Yeah, they don't really want to tell you how it works.
I find the fact that they're working with a U.S. government agency, i.e. the National Security Agency, or at least did for Vista, to do security kind of disturbing, especially if you live in another country.
Yeah, the other thing to keep in mind is while Microsoft will send you one that will install all of the updates, which is certainly a good thing and it's certainly something you can do, this CD actually gets built in real time from the actual updates that are up to date today. So it's possible if you make a CD today, if you got one from Microsoft and you don't live in the States, it might take a bit longer for the CD to get to you.
So is this for computers you've imaged? You can have the same CD and take it around multiple machines?
That's
basically
right.
Stick it in, let it run. It can take a while on a slower computer, but it'll get there.
Yeah, it actually has all this wget stuff and a whole lot of batch files and stuff, and you sort of edit a couple of files to say what updates you want and then fire it off, and it populates the directory, and then you can tell it whether you want it to burn CDs of the stuff or not, or it tells you where the folder is that's got all the stuff, and when you burn it, it's got like an auto run and everything. Very cool stuff.
How does it know what you need?
It looks at what's already on the machine, and if it's already installed, it doesn't reinstall that update. If 917454 is on, it doesn't put it back on.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's free. Did I say that? Yep, it's free. So it's definitely worth a look.
Like all the
other? Yeah. Okay, there is software that will protect you from viruses, spyware, and grayware. If you're interested in this, see our big discussion on it in Module 9. In small offices and homes, computers usually connect directly to the internet rather than through a protected LAN. I disagree with this because most of us have routers, which have firewalls. This will put computers that are outside of a LAN at high risk for viruses and other attacks. If you're connecting directly through a modem, make sure that Windows firewall is turned on and you have virus protection enabled, because that is all the protection you really have from anyone wanting to get at you. And make sure that you, by God, you have all those updates installed. Application software and the operating systems should be updated with the latest patches. The security policy should determine the level of security applications put in place. In developing a policy, management should calculate the cost of the data loss versus the expense of security protection and determine which trade-offs are acceptable. And you know what? Security for basic security is fairly low cost at this point. If you're a business, you're going to have to pay something, and home users might think that something would be quite a lot, but really for a business, it's just a very small price to pay rather than losing your data. Okay. Any questions? All right, it's 10:30. We're going to finish for the day, and we will come back tomorrow and have more of this. Any questions on anything besides the curriculum that we've just discussed? Yes. Hold on.
We'll do it after lecture because I've got to hit stop in a minute. See if anybody else has got any questions.
Any questions?